Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
Hi, my name is Andrea Rappaport, and I recently got divorced.
And hello, my name is Morgan Stogsdill, and I'm a family law attorney. And just to note, I did not represent Andrea in her divorce proceedings.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. I was almost embarrassed to the point where I didn't want the judge to judge me.
Because if you don't inflate your expenses, you're not going to get enough money. And that is just false.
How Not to Suck at Divorce.
It's a new podcast, and it's going to be both informative and entertaining.
Okay, well, hopefully entertaining.
Oh, that's on you, Andrea.
We are going to share the good, the bad, the really bad, and the, are you kidding me, things that you need to know before you embark on this divorce journey.
And with that, let's get started. How about it?
Okay, guys, so this episode is called The Financial Affidavit and Other Ways to Slowly Lose Your Mind. We chose to put this episode next because after you choose your attorney, filling out what's called the financial affidavit will likely be the first step in your divorce process.
That's correct, Andrea. That's going to be one of the first things that you will want to be doing in your case, assuming that there aren't other emergencies. You're going to be filling out a financial affidavit, and that's a lengthy document. But here's why you do it. Number one, it shows your income, your assets, and your expenses. And why is that important? Well, number one, we need to know as lawyers what you need to live on, what you have to live on. And also, this affidavit is an affidavit. So what does that mean? It's signed under oath. So it's very important to have yours signed under oath and accurate, and also the other spouse's signed under oath and accurate.
So, okay. And this is something that I didn't put in our notes like pre-recording, but as you were talking, this popped into my mind. You know, you and I, we obviously know what a financial affidavit is, right? Because you see them all the time and I did one. But for people who have like no idea, right? They're not at this point yet in the process. Let's kind of talk everybody through like what it actually looks like. So guys, like this is it's a document that your attorney will email you. And Morgan, it's like how many pages long?
Right. I think it's about, you know, it depends. I mean, I practice in Illinois and there is a standard form in Illinois. So it's numerous pages long. It's very detailed. It starts out by asking you obviously what your names are, what your income was for the prior year. And then it goes into your income section, the taxes taken out, and then it goes into your expense section. And then lastly, it kind of ends with what assets do you have under your name?
Right. And then it's the part. So guys, here's the thing about this affidavit. And the reason why I joked about it, a way for to lose your mind, is we've all filled out our income, right? Like anytime you apply for a credit card or you try to finance a mattress, right? Like whatever it is you're doing, you've filled out your income before. We know that part. The part that is unique to this and the part that makes you feel a little like, what? Is where you have to break down your expenses, because not many times in life do you go through. I mean, this document is categorized specifically, like every little thing. We're talking about how much do you spend a month on getting your hair cut, getting your children's hair cut, getting your nails done, how much does your dry cleaning cost, all of these little things. And it sounds benign, but the reason why we're taking the time to go through this in a podcast episode is knowledge is power. And we want you to be prepared for a part of the divorce process that you wouldn't think would stir up emotions, but there's something about putting pen to paper of how much you spend every month that does, it feels a little invasive. And I know that for me, when I filled it out, I actually felt a little bit of shame at how much my life costs. And by no means am I living in a gold-plated palace, like, believe you me, but I even thought like, oh, well, I don't really want to tell everybody that I get manicures every other week, at least. And I mean, like sometimes my groceries are this much, but there are other times where they're less. And maybe I don't want to tell everybody that I go to TJ Maxx when I'm sad and I buy things from the runway section. So, I mean, that has to be normal, right?
It is so normal. I think you're like many people that are just a little bit ashamed, even though there's nothing to be ashamed about. And then there's some people that feel really proud about how much they spend a month. It runs the gamut. You know, they're so proud that they are spending thousands upon thousands of dollars in all these categories. And a lot of times with those people, I need to work with and say, is this really what's happening? Because this needs to be accurate. But I think your feelings are what the majority of people feel filling this out.
You know, and it's funny because at times I wanted to downplay everything, which I know logically, even in that moment, I knew that I shouldn't do that because, and you guys probably can put two and two together, that the court uses these documents to then help determine your financial need every month, right? Because that's the job of your spouse to keep you at status quo for the time that you're still married. And then, you know, going forward, you determine maintenance and blah, blah, blah. But I was almost embarrassed to the point where I didn't want the judge to judge me on these things, which I mean, like, even as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, you stupid, stupid woman, like, this is idiotic. But It is the God's honest truth. I wanted to downplay stuff. I felt like on a completely unrealistic level that somebody would look at this and think, you are living totally outside of your means. You should not have been shopping at these places. And what business do you have getting your hair highlighted all the time? You, my dear, get nothing. And I think that it's because, guys, and when you get to this point in the process, if you haven't gotten there yet, I think that a lot of you will relate to this. This document is categorized. So you go through certain sections and maybe it's a section that is easy for you to do, right? Like, you know, like your rent, right? Like if you're renting an apartment or your mortgage or whatever, and then all of your bills, what's your water bill? What's your gas? What's your that? Like that stuff's all benign, right? Because it is what it is. It's not like, oh, I feel guilty about how much water I use. Like that's not really a thing, is it? But then when it gets to like the entertainment stuff, or then also the stuff for your kids. And you're like, I don't know. It wants you to break down summer camp. It wants you to break down all of their extracurricular activities and not only how much it costs to be a part of the freaking hockey team, but how much does all of the equipment cost? And how much are you doing for this a month? And how much are you doing for this a month? And for, you know, for most of us, a lot of these things are like one-time purchases. but you have to like do all of the math. I'm like, even as I'm going through it right now, it's honestly a little triggering. So what we're going to try to do in this episode is break it down so it feels more manageable, because right. I will be completely honest. This part of the process threw me for a loop. I remember receiving the email from my attorney with this being attached, and I remember like putting it off. Like I remember like, we'll do that another day.
Right. I can tell right now I need to calm you down. We're going to get through this together.
Right. But this is, and I don't know if this is just a me thing or if this is something that you see with other people.
So it's funny because there are certain people that really like this thing, right? Those are the accountants, the financial people, the people who do the spreadsheets for a living. They are excited when I send this document to them. But most people like you are not excited. And in fact, this is daunting to them. And there's a way that we can make it less daunting for them and still get to the right number. One of the worst pieces of advice that I hear on the street that I do not give is that you have to inflate your expenses, because if you don't inflate your expenses, you're not going to get enough money. And that is just false. What you will get is a judge looking at you like you are not accurate, that your expenses look ridiculous, and you'll lose all credibility. So the whole fact of why we do these things is to figure out what the expenses are and what your needs are. So be accurate, and it may take a little extra time, but we can talk about, you know, ways to make it easier.
I think that is like, guys, if you have to pause and rewind to what she just said, do not inflate. This is not a competition. If you put down that you spend $10,000 a month on apparel, it's not like a judge looks at that and says, well, she said she needs $10,000. By God, give her $10,000. No. Also, when it comes down to how much you're actually getting, this affidavit plays a small role in it. It's if your soon to be ex-spouse doesn't have that money to give you, then nobody cares about the fact that you want to spend $10,000 at Bloomingdale's a month. So, and on to Morgan's other point, you will look like an idiot, because the next part that I was about to bring up is, in addition to all of your monthly expenses, you have to provide, I believe it's 3 years of bank statements. Is that correct?
So every affidavit is different, but on the front of the first page will tell you what they want you to provide.
Got it.
And so in Illinois, they want bank statements. They want, you know, tax returns. Mm-hmm. The more statements you can provide, the better, because piecemealing it only creates more work for yourself. Getting it done one and done right out the door all together will save you time and a headache.
Right. I remember I had to provide three, for me, I remember it was 3 years of bank statements. I also had to provide, I think it might've been a year or longer of all PayPal, Venmo, transactions, things like that, because for my business, I get paid a lot that way. And so going back to what Morgan said before, you can't really fib on this, because you're about to have to show backup evidence that the money that you say is coming in is actually coming in, and what's going out is actually going out. So, and Morgan, is there any other reason why they want 3 years worth of bank statements, or why all of these like evidential like submissions are important?
It's just important to be honest with your backup. A lot of this is backup for your numbers. So if I receive a financial affidavit from the other side, I want to see and cross-check, like, do these numbers really make sense? Where are these numbers coming from? Because I have gotten many affidavits in the past where none of the numbers make sense. And guess what? That's where you start to lose credibility right away. Giving 3 years backwards full of statements in a divorce case is very standard, at least in my practice. Some people want more, some people want less. But 3 years is pretty typical.
Guys, again, like, this process isn't fun for me. For some, I guess you guys get a kick out of it, and go you. But this is an important thing that you have to do. And hiring the right kind of counsel for you will make this part as painless as possible. Okay, Morgan, here's some rapid fire questions. On average, how long does it take for a client to fill out this affidavit effectively?
So everyone does it differently, and depending on how big of a firm you hire, people do it differently. I would say it definitely takes most people a few weeks. We do it a little differently, where we will have some help from our office working with the client to walk them through so it doesn't seem so daunting. But there's a lot of back and forth because numbers change. We want to make sure that it's totally accurate. So usually what we do is we work through it together. And then at the end of the day, I do look at these before they go out the door. And we go through these numbers, and I'm pretty on top of what numbers, you know, are what at this point. So I will say, look, this number, I don't know about your lifestyle, but I know that this number is too high. Or you are way low here. There's no way that you can go to the grocery store and feed a family of four or a family of three for $100, you know, a month. It's just wrong. Right. So we work on the numbers to make sure that they're accurate. But I would say on average a few weeks for sure to get the client to give us something that's really kind of with the meat in it. And then we have to fix it.
And I know that your practice is very hands-on. So you and your associates will work with the client to help them fill out this form accurately and in a way that doesn't make them want to jump off a bridge. However, is that typical, or is this something that a lot of times somebody is just emailed and then they have to fill it out on their own?
So I think in every business, my understanding is that the client, most practices, the client takes the first stab at it. What happens there and what level of service they have thereafter totally depends on who you hire and what capabilities they have. For us, we're a big firm and we have a lot of capabilities and a lot, we do a lot of high-end servicing of the clients. So that's why we do it the way we do it. Not everyone has that capability.
That makes me want to take a moment to address something that we spoke about in our last episode, which is with hiring an attorney for this process. Unfortunately, you do get what you pay for. And that is just the way it is. Now, not everybody can afford a white glove service. They just can't. It's not an occurrence for everyone. But like I said last time we recorded, you are going to end up spending around the same amount of money as far as the retainer fees go in the end, if you have a divorce that's relatively high conflict or there's money at stake or really anything, like it ends up adding up. So guys, again, think before you sign with an attorney, because these are things you want to know. Will your attorney be involved while you fill out these forms? Now, like I said, it doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, my attorney helped me with this, therefore these forms are solid gold and there is no way that I'm not going to be awarded every single thing under the sun that I deserve. Maybe not. However, and take it from me, because I did not have that. And I filled out these forms by myself. And I had no legal advice. And I don't know that I made mistakes, because my case was a little bit different. But I can tell you that it was an incredibly stressful. It was daunting. It felt like I was wandering through the woods blindfolded, wondering if I was about to step in a puddle of something. Like I didn't know what I was doing, and it was very stressful. And we all know that this divorce process is stressful as is, and you're emotional and you're tired. And so keep that in mind, guys, that if you are the type of person who might want a little extra help while you're in some uncharted territory, know that this is something that's a possibility for people to help you, but that's likely a service that you are going to need to pay a little bit more for, but it is likely going to be worth it. That is all I have to say about that.
Well, in that same token, let's talk about, you know, most of my business is higher end divorce. Correct. And some people just either don't have the capacity to understand their finances, have never been involved in it. All they know is how to spend and things get paid for. Some people are just, it's too daunting for them because they have so many accounts and money flowing in and out everywhere. Mm-hmm. And no matter how long they sat to do this, it would probably take them a year to get it done. In those types of cases, it may make sense to hire or outsource another person that will help do it. And we have those people at our discretion and our use. So there are people where you can essentially hand over all of your documents, all of your statements, and say, help me fill this out from that, those statements. And that is even better if someone wants to or can afford that, because it's very accurate. All the backup is there.
Now, is that someone that, I mean, I know that you have people like that in your back pocket whom you can refer. Are those people also associates of the practice, or is it like an outside party, like a totally different business, like Larry's, you know, Larry's financial affidavit house? Like, it's
exactly, it would be a totally separate business. And it's almost like an expert on your case, because that person is tasked with taking the underlying information and inputting it to the right fields.
Okay. And this is not the same, and I'm jumping ahead several episodes if this is something we ever have to cover, but this is not the same as a forensic accountant.
Not the same, although there are some shops that have people that can do both, but okay. Definitely not the same.
Okay. Understood. Now, in along the same lines of what we talked about before, as far as things costing money, but the return, you know, being worth the investment, for people who do have a lot of money coming in and out from different places, right? And a lot of, let's say you are not the breadwinner and your spouse is the one with a whole lot of stuff going on. There are investments, there are multiple homes, there are multiple streams of income. Does it behoove you to pay the money to have somebody else jump in and do this? Or is that a hard question to answer because it's all case specific?
Yeah, I think it's case specific, but I usually know right away in talking to a client or a potential client whether it's within their realm of possibility that they just may not be able to complete this task without some extra help. They're very easy to spot because they've got stuff everywhere or they're just not up on the finances. And in those cases, we would certainly want to bring somebody on board if it was cost effective for them. And also other cases, people just don't want to deal with it and they have the money to buy or at least pay for it.
Something else that's important to talk about, and it's obvious in cases of high conflict divorce, but it's not as obvious when you have something that's more amicable, is that unfortunately, when money is involved in a situation, it's natural for humans to get greedy. Even if you are divorcing someone whom you, there is a mutual respect. It's, you know, we love, now we don't, go your separate way, be happy, God be with you, you know, all that kind of stuff. Those same people, and they might have very good intentions. If they are being influenced by their counsel or their mother or their father or their friends or whomever to make sure that they walk out of this as unscathed as possible, you might be at the losing end of that stick. So be mindful that even if you think that, yes, there's a lot of money, but I don't know, and I don't think that he or she would do this, it's probably in your best interest to pay that extra and make sure that everything is done above board, because you just don't know. And unfortunately, in divorce, I mean, anything can happen. You just don't know. And this doesn't mean that your future ex-spouse is a horrible person. It just means that this is human nature. It's their money. It's their livelihood. It's your money. It's your livelihood. Really quickly, before we move on to the next part, what if we're looking at somebody on the other end of the spectrum or in middle ground, which is most of America is made of, where there's not a ton of money. There's not a lot of money coming in and out. Each person has one or two forms of income. Maybe the mother stays at home. Maybe the mother has a job that doesn't bring in as much as he does. Maybe the situation is reversed. Maybe they're equal, blah, blah, blah. And what if someone like that is listening to this episode right now and they're thinking, well, I don't know where the hell I fall in this. Like, what do I do? Do I need to pay an attorney? Do I need to go with a higher end attorney who's going to help me through this? Can I handle this on my own? I don't know. Like, how do we help those people?
I think that's a great question. And we can help those people. Meaning, if you don't have a huge estate or you don't make a ton of money and you do have, you know, a very simple W-2 job, it's still helpful for you to fill it out. And why I say that is because not only in most cases are you required to do so, but it's super important to know that once you're divorced, can you meet your expenses? There are things that may be considered in your case, such as child support or maintenance. And you need to know if I'm either paying child support and maintenance to my spouse, or I'm receiving child support and or maintenance. What does my financial picture look like? A lot of people after a divorce need to move into a new place, or need to secure alternate transportation or items like that. If you don't know how much you have to spend or what your expenses are, it's going to be really difficult for you to do that. And it's a real disservice to you to just shoot from the hip, because you may not have enough money to live. And that's not something we want.
And that is something that I think is really important to note. A lot of people think, I don't know that I have the money to pay an attorney to help me do this. However, I cannot stress this enough. And guys, turn up the volume in your car or wherever you are and hear me. It is more important to know that you and your children will have enough money after this is over to live. You will find a way to pay the attorney's bills. It is better to go to your family now and say, I need help with this, than to not do that. And I am speaking from personal experience, mark my freaking words, than to not do this and say, I'm so sorry, Dad, but because I didn't do this, I am going to need your financial help indefinitely, because I do not have enough to live. So this stuff is really important. And this, you know, and I joked before that this is a horrible part of the process. And don't get me wrong, it sucks, but you don't have to suck doing this. And this is all going to go back to have the right team for you. You have to have a team. Something else, and this is a little bit of a precursor to getting into what a forensic accountant does, which is for another episode. But if your divorce is caused by, I mean, obviously there's a breakdown in the marriage, yada, yada, yada. But if there's any kind of deceit, if there's anything that happened that if you were betrayed in some way, have your spidey senses out that if somebody lied to you about this, there might be other things going on, likely involving money, that you are not aware of.
Right. And on that note, you know, one of the things that we see a lot are people giving us affidavits, financial affidavits that are signed under oath. And they say, this is what I make. And then I have a client saying, but we got to spend whatever I wanted. We didn't make that. I don't understand this.
Right.
And then if I go back through the party's bank accounts, there are more deposits into the bank accounts than income listed on the disclosure statement.
Yeah.
So those are certain things that we can look at when I'm hearing things from a client that just don't add up, or right, just to kind of calm the client to say, I looked into this, this is what I'm seeing. So those are things that I look for. That's why making a really good financial affidavit is very helpful.
Correct. And also there are things, one of the parties could be getting money from the family. And if money is given on a regular basis, then that's considered income.
In Illinois, and, yes.
Right. In Illinois. So that is something important to note. So these are things that it's important to know. And if you don't know, you don't know. And if you don't know, you lose. So again, you have to have a team who is going to help you do this. And you might not think that there's a lot at stake, but there's probably more than you think that there is. So with that, we will move on to the next question, because I was just on a little soapbox here for a while. But okay. Going back to not sucking at filling this out. If we were to break this down into like really simple steps, Morgan, how would you advise someone not to suck at filling out the financial affidavit?
So what I advise people to do is if they're confused on a number, I say, write me a note, write a note on there, put an asterisk next to it and say why you're confused or what's causing you pause, and let me work through that number with you. Or one of my staff people can work through the number with them, because that's where people get hung up. They get hung up, maybe it's not accurate, here's what I'm thinking, but instead of moving on, they're still stuck on that one answer. So that really kind of causes some delays for them, and we want to make it as easy as possible for them. So okay. Write it out.
That makes sense. Speaking of delays, once you turn in your affidavit, is there like a ticking clock on how long the counterparty has to turn in their affidavit, or how does that work? And is that a state to state thing, or is there a rule across the board?
So it's definitely a state to state thing or a local rule, depending on the jurisdiction that you're in. Most places do have rules with regards to who has to give it first, when they have to give it, then what timing the other side gives it. Sometimes in general, if you're doing a divorce really collaboratively or mediation minded, staying amicable, we will set dates just to mutually exchange them. So there's lots of ways, rule wise, depending on your jurisdiction, with timing that you have to give it over, or we can just agree of how we're going to do it.
Ugh. Hearing that phrase collaborative divorce always sounds so funny to me. Like, together we will break away. Together totally. We will break apart, you know? something that I kind of glazed over earlier, but I didn't actually, we didn't really highlight upon it. But how much does this affidavit actually matter? Meaning, like, doesn't it all kind of come down to how much you make, how much they make, how does this whole thing really play out?
I hate to say it, but it depends on the case. But I will tell you that an affidavit, a financial affidavit, can make or break a case.
Whoa.
That's how important it is.
I did not expect you to say that. I really mm-hmm. didn't.
And here's the thing too, is don't feel like when you fill one out that you can't modify it in the future, or if you make a mistake, you can modify it. You know, you try not to make any mistakes, but mistakes happen. If there's a mistake or something you left off, own it. Put a letter to the other side. Say, I made a mistake, and here's the one that's signed under oath. Here's the mistake we made. That's going to look better than leaving it wacky or not done, or just totally not owning the mistake and sending a new updated one, because they're going to catch on.
I'm picturing I'm about to say some guy, but I should say some person. Let's not put people into a category. But I'm picturing someone trying to hide some assets, right? And then the other side finds it and they're like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I forgot to include all of the money that I get every month from this little farm I run in Belgium. Sorry.
Yeah, that would be a slightly different. When I'm talking about a mistake, I'm talking, you know, kind of close to the time and not much money or something, you know, minor. I'm not talking about offshore accounts that just slip somebody's mind.
Oh my God, this whole topic just like, and I'm sure I can't be the only one who feels this way, but you know, like when you get married, you don't think that one day you're going to be filling out a financial affidavit, you know, like it's just not stuff that we really think about. And then it is icky. There's no way around that, guys. This is an icky part of the process. And I'm wondering, can we think, Morgan, of any funner, if that's a word, which it's not, ways that we could torture ourselves? Like, could we eat some like fish that's been sitting out for a few weeks, or dive into Lake Michigan in the middle of February, or become a vegan or something?
I mean, on my end, you could have something even better. You could marry and divorce the same person 3 different times, because I've had that happen.
Oh my God. What is wrong with that person? And can we have them on the show sometime?
It's a good question. Good question all around.
Oh my gosh. Now, this is also something that I didn't put in our pre-notes, but have there been things I know you can't speak specifically, but have there been things that you've seen in these affidavits where you're like, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the things that people say that they need or are part of their daily lives or weekly lives, you know, some of them you just laugh out loud. But the fact is that in my state, you look at what the lifestyle is. So if it was truly part of their lifestyle, then it's not a joke, but you just can't even imagine some of the things that are put down as needs.
I mean, I worked once when I was in my 20s, I worked as a receptionist for a real estate firm that had their offices in the bottom of a high-end building here in Chicago. It was at Lake Point Tower. Do you know where that is?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. There was an old man who lived in that building who like a really old guy. And he had this tiny little dog that he always wandered around. And I remember he would come in because he was lonely and he would chit chat with me. And he talked about how he had a masseuse for his dog. And the dog got regular massages because, you know, it helped the dog. And I'm thinking right now, like if that poor old man ever got divorced, he had to
Yes. I've had financial affidavits, and it's dead serious where they spend as much on their dogs as they do on children. And I'm talking babysitters for dogs, strollers that are the same price as a baby stroller, a high-end
baby
stroller.
Like an upper baby?
Yes.
That's amazing.
And it's absolutely dead serious.
I want to be that dog. I feel like filling out these financial affidavits need like a cocktail.
Agreed.
You know, like, I feel like maybe like we can have like a drinking game or something. I mean, you can't really, cause you would die from alcohol poisoning at the end of it. But like, I feel like we need like a drink. Like if we were to say we're going to attach a cocktail to the end of this, I feel like for me, and I'm a wine drinker, you know that about me, but at the end of something like this, I think I need something stronger, and I would do a Mexican martini.
That sounds,
you know, do you know what those are?
No, but tell me, maybe okay. I'll make one.
So I grew up in Texas. I grew up in San Antonio, and I went to school for a little while in Austin. I went to UT for like four and a half minutes. And while I was there for those 4.5 minutes, there's this restaurant called Trudy's, and they were known for making Mexican martinis, which is a mashup of a margarita and a martini, like, and a dirty martini. So it's tequila. It's probably, I think it was triple sec or simple syrup and the lime juice, basically kind of envision like a skinny margarita, right? And then you add in a little bit of the olive juice and then you shake it like a martini.
Ooh.
It is so good. It is so good. And what's sad right now is the way that I'm smiling so much thinking about alcohol.
You are. You're very excited. I think I might need
to check into a program when we're done recording this because I'm a little bit too happy. But like, it just kicks you and you feel warm and then you kind of forget everything that just happened. So I say, people, make yourself a Mexican martini. What would you do, Morgan?
I think I would do a grounds for divorce.
What?
That's a real cocktail. Grounds what? For divorce. I know you don't know about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. I'm going to tell you how to make it. So it's, you need pineapple, you need tequila, you need liquor 43 and a little bit of lime, and you shake it all up and you make a cocktail with it. And it is called the grounds for divorce.
Wait, that is amazing. And, you know, before we started recording, we said that we were going to get together soon for drinks. I kind of feel like we need to do these and post some pictures to our social media of our like financial affidavit cocktails.
Let's do it.
Let's give you a whole thing. We could start a movement, Morgan, a movement. People, we will get you divorced and drunk all at the same time. We are
I'll get you divorced. You get them drunk.
Right? Yeah, that would probably be a conflict of interest for you. You don't really want drunk people. And honestly, I don't want you drunk either. I'll help you do your hair and makeup at the end of this. But like, you know, you can get drunk on your own. But here's the thing, guys, in all seriousness, it is really important that you have something to look forward to after you fill this little sucker out, because it is a lot. So go to therapy, make plans with a friend, do something. It is really, really important that throughout this entire process, you do everything possible to preserve your mental health, because a divorce is not a sprint, it's a marathon. This doesn't mean that you cannot get through it. You can get through it. But there are points in this process that just suck. We are helping you not suck through this, but there are points that just do suck. And filling out a financial affidavit, unless you are a freak show, like some of Morgan's clients who are numbers people and love doing this, you're not going to love it. But it's really important. And I just can't stress enough that you need to have a community. You have to have an attorney who you believe in, who is a team player, who's on your side. And you also need friends. And at this point in the juncture, most likely the close people in your world will be aware that you're going through a divorce. So rely on them. Also, Morgan, and I know you're big on this, physical fitness is important.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. What I do after a really tough thing like the financial affidavit is filled out, I tell a client, reward yourself. Let's take a day or two off from this divorce. Don't call me unless you want to talk, and we can talk about something else other than the divorce if you want to. But clear your mental health for 2 days and then let's reconvene, because you've done a lot of work on this and you just need a break.
It's true. If you go through this process, you're at this point and it's nice enough to go for a walk outside, go for a walk outside. Walking is really important, moving your body. And a lot of times when we get stuck mentally and emotionally, we want to freeze our bodies physically. And that is the last thing that we should be doing. You have to keep moving. You have to find a way to move. If you have to scream and cry, okay, scream and cry. Talk about it. Don't keep this stuff to yourself because you will go crazy. Talk, move. If you have questions, consult your attorney, talk to your therapist. I was joking before when I said therapy, but I am not joking. We all need it. Every single one of you right now listening to this podcast should have a therapist. So get one. And it's not because you're crazy. Some of you probably are, but it's because we all need a therapist. Your therapists probably have therapists.
All right. So speaking of crazy, let's make you feel better about your life. And let's talk about some crazy divorce stories to make our listeners feel like they do not suck at divorce.
My God. It's so great. The things that we find on the internet. So here's something that I found about keeping the financial affidavit in line and the things that people spend money on. This says, an Indian man said that one reason for wanting to divorce his wife was that she spent a huge portion of the family's fortune on ice cream. And it looks like the judge did not fully agree with the husband, because he ordered him to pay his soon-to-be ex-wife of 23 years extra money every month to cover her ice cream expenses. So, sir, it looks like you are about to embark on a rocky road, my friend.
There you go. You're
going to be living at 31 flavors. Living. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
I would probably like it for about an hour.
Having to pay for somebody's ice cream or just eating all of the ice cream?
You know, living at 31 flavors, just for 1 hour.
No, thank you. And actually, ice cream isn't even one of my favorite things. I feel like I could do it for a little. Yeah, if there was an ice cream place, but it was actually just like cake.
Yes.
Right? Like there needs to be a place where you just go get slice after slice of cake. I don't know that ice cream would do it for me.
Yeah, I'd probably just eat the hot chocolate sauce.
Yeah.
That'd be fine.
I want to pour some hot sauce all over a financial affidavit and then light it on fire.
That's a great idea.
Oh, guys, you know what? This has been an episode that feels heavy, and it was, but this is all very, very doable. You can do it. Like we said before, this divorce is a marathon. It's not a sprint. But these are all important little pieces that we need to jump through, work through to get to the finish line, which is having a happy life.
Just remember, okay? you have this.
You have this. We've got you. We will help you through this.
I'm Morgan Stockstill.
And I am Andrea Rappaport.
And we're going to teach you
how not to suck at divorce.